Welcome to Spiritually Naked, where physical and non-physical worlds collide, offering a refreshing concoction of optimism and realism. It's time to strip down the barriers of limiting beliefs, to master the art of manifestation and synchronized living. Everything you need to live an inspired, awakened life is within your grasp. Start creating the life you desire today with Spiritually Naked as your guide to simplifying complicated issues for real life change. Now here are your hosts, Steve and Stephanie Banks.
Hello everyone, thank you for joining us here tonight on Spiritually Naked. I am your host, Stephen Banks, and I'm here with my partner and co-host, Stephanie Banks, who in the second portion of our program will channel for us a collective consciousness named Solomon. But first, we'd like to introduce to you the guest. Our guest that we have with us tonight is Trish and Rob McGregor. And Trish is the author of 42 novels, and Rob has written 20 novels, including Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. These prolific authors also write nonfiction books on a variety of topics such as synchronicity, dreams, astrology, the tarot, and meditation. Their latest book is about precognition called Sensing the Future. Thank you for being here.
Hi, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.
Before we go anywhere, I have one quick question. Do you guys sleep? That's a lot of books.
Listen, we've been at this a long time.
Yeah, right. It's one of the few advantages of being older.
I guess
so. We've had more time to accomplish things.
Yeah, you guys are obviously well-read as well, because I started to read Sensing the Future, which is very well-written, by the way.
he wasn't there, and I looked at the tree, and sure enough, you could like slice it right down the middle, and half of it was dead, and the other half was perfectly alive. And 2 days later, wow. That man died, and one of his kidneys failed.
Huh. Jeez. Yeah, it's those kinds of signs and symbols that you have to pay attention to.
Yeah, and he, if I recall correctly, he really loved that tree, hey?
He was the only thing on his property that was alive that he didn't mind taking care of.
Wow. See, we had a similar experience. We used to have a dusky conure type of parrot, and she would sit out in a tree in our backyard. And then we got Hurricane Wilma. This is in 2005. And it stalled over our area, and so we could walk outside because the eye was directly over where we live. And we saw that her tree had been split in half. We knew it meant something, didn't know what. That night, she got spooked, or that evening, by all the generators that were on. And she flew off because her wings weren't clipped. Mm-hmm. And Rob found her the next morning, buried under some leaves, a cold front, and moved in. She died 2 days later.
Wow.
Her tree had split in half, just like your clients.
Right, yeah. Exactly. So, and I think trees are such a huge learning tool for us. They're a conduit to other realms where we can really tap into that.
Well, especially
yeah, we have a friend who told us the story. She was coming home from work, going up to her house, and she looked, and there was this lot next to her house, and there was a big tree there, oak tree, and it seemed to be illuminated. I mean, she stood there and stared at it and wondered, was it the moon? Or she couldn't tell what it was that was illuminating this light. It seemed to, but the illumination seemed to come from the tree itself. She watched it for about 5 minutes or so, and after that, it was gone. And the next day when she came home, the tree was gone. It was all chopped up and in piles. It wasn't her property. Somebody had that tree cut down, and it was just all in logs on the ground. And it was like it was a case of precognition by a tree.
Well, by nature.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Saying goodbye.
Yeah. Right. To warn.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
So I can sense people out there asking, so I'm going to ask on behalf of a whole bunch of people, I think, right now. I'm tapping into the precognition of our listeners.
Yeah.
when we're experiencing something like that, so let's take this willow tree that died that belonged to my client, and half of it dies. And so now I'm aware that this is trying to tell me something. Is there a way of figuring out what it's trying to tell me and what I should do about it?
Well, I think that as these experiences accumulate, it's easier and easier to figure them out. In other words, if anything ever happens to the tree that Callie used to sit on, our parrot, I'll know what it means. You know, just like if you encounter another tree that's half dead, you'll have a sense of what it means.
Yeah, true enough.
Or even perhaps if one was to start sprouting in that same spot for no apparent reason, could that mean the rebirth of?
It could be. I mean, the tree that our bird was in has since, it just huge now. It healed itself. It's got gorgeous branches. And recently, about a year ago, our daughter got a new kitten. And I had posted a picture online of the kitten. And I said, this cat feels so familiar to me. And a friend of mine who's really into animals and who knew Callie, who knew our parrot, said, Trish, this is Callie. She's come back as a cat.
Hmm.
And I thought, it makes sense, you know.
It can, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I've sensed that before. I actually said, and I think sometimes it's hard. This is a hard one for me to explain because I personally don't believe that humans will reincarnate as an animal. I believe that animals can reincarnate as other animals. And I mean, who's to say, mm-hmm. really? But when my mom passed away, her dog that I adopted became so much like my mom, and other people commented on it.
Like her personality.
Yeah, it could be a fragment of personality, a fragment of your mother's personality.
Or you could be projecting that. Perhaps.
I think it seems more like it was a fragment of it, or there was like just this slight infusion of her characteristics. And so would that be classified then as that's not really a synchronicity, is what would that be?
That'd be her coming to say hello.
Out of all those 67 books or whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's so many strange and unknown things that happen. It's impossible to classify everything because some things just don't have names.
Yeah, that's so true. You know? And we can't know everything. Like, we have an idea, but it's still coming through our perception of experience. And really, we're capable of quite literally anything, as Solomon would say. Mm-hmm. Anything and everything is possible.
And we've learned so much from our predecessors. And was there anyone in particular that sort of comes to mind that was the first to coin the word precognitive? Or
well, Nostradamus is probably one of the most famous ones.
Okay.
Maybe coin the word.
Yeah, but I don't know. That's a good idea.
Maybe
J.D. Ryan. Yeah, it may have been J.D. Ryan who
actually... University in the 1930s. Actually, he didn't believe in precognition, interestingly, but with the experiments he was doing over and over, he just finally had to change his mind because there was so much supportive evidence that he was receiving that he accepted not only telepathy, but precognition.
Right, because you sort of get to a point where you just can't ignore it anymore. Wasn't there a big, wasn't there a sort of a blow up of some sorts between Carl Jung and Freud over?
Sigmund Freud, yeah.
Yeah, there was quite an interesting one, too. In fact, I'm beginning to wonder if Jung is the one who did that, who coined the word. But in this particular instance, Freud and Jung met for the second time, and at this meeting, Jung asked Freud about his views on precognition and parapsychology in general, and Freud dismissed it all as just nonsense. And Jung was really stung by his reaction because he was moving farther and farther into myths and, you know, dreams and the paranormal. So he held back his rather sharp reply. And then he felt this curious sensation like his diaphragm was made of iron and was turning scorching hot. Then there was a loud cracking sound in a nearby bookcase, and both men bolted to their feet, alarmed, figuring that the bookcase was going to topple. And then Jung said, "There, this is an example of so-called catalytic exteriorization phenomena," whatever all that means. And Freud said, "Oh, this is sheer bosh." And Jung said, "It isn't, and it's going to happen again." And sure enough, no sooner had he said the words,
there's a big crack.
Yeah. Same thing happened.
The funny thing is some skeptics take that story and try to take it apart and say, well, there's something wrong with the wood. And they're just
it was just really coincidental.
Yeah, right. That it happened twice.
Twice, yeah.
So much time and energy is spent trying to debunk things that could be so beneficial to us.
That's right. So true.
Yeah, it's so easy to be a debunker, and oftentimes without any knowledge of the subject itself when it comes to the paranormal and parapsychology.
We had an experience where we had submitted a query on synchronicity to Psychology Today. Sure enough, the following month, an article comes out that debunked synchronicity. I thought, I think I know where they got this idea.
I guess.
It's amazing, though, how things are going and the direction that we're heading in terms of, generally speaking, like how powerful our gifts and our awareness is becoming in our society. And just as equally, people are fighting against it.
Do you think that things are changing a little bit in that regard through your studies? Are people becoming more and more open? And are there more synchronicities happening?
Yeah, I think there are. When we first started out, years ago, when I first met Rob, one of the first questions I asked him, I said, "Do you know what synchronicity is?" And he kind of looked at me and he goes, "Yeah, I think I do." And then he said, "Meaningful coincidence, right?" And so I thought, okay, this is a guy. It's the only guy I ever asked, "You know what synchronicity is?" who actually knew.
tell them what you did then.
Yeah, and then I went home and I told my roommate, I said, "Well, I've met the guy I'm going to marry."
I didn't know that, though.
Well, we're out of time for this portion of the program, guys. If you'd like to let everyone know where they can find Sensing the Future and where they can find more information about you guys.
The local bookstores, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, are all carrying Sensing the Future. As far as our blog is really where we post most regularly about synchronicity and precognition, and that's blog.synchrosecrets.com. And that'll lead you to our personal websites and all the rest of it.
Fantastic.
Cool. Well, thanks so much, guys.
Yeah, and stay tuned, everyone out there. We'll be back with Trish, Rob, and Solomon.
It is our pleasure to be here with you today in this time, in your space of this current reality. We come to you with a mutual understanding, a mutual love for one another. We appreciate these conversations. We would like to first and foremost acknowledge the trust that you have in us as we come to you for the idea of co-creating your experiences on Earth. And in turn, you are helping us create our experiences from a different realm, from a different perspective. So we thank you for this understanding that we are here to support one another on our journeys. We would like to invite you to put forth any questions or queries that you may have, and we will do our best to appease your curiosities.
Okay, I have a question. Considering who's in the White House, what's the future of this planet?
Heavy question.
Isn't it?
We've heard it before.
I'm sure.
Sometimes the catalyst to change is something that is seemingly in opposition to what the majority of the planet would prefer. In other words, the rise in the feelings that go along with the current political system is what will catapult the planet into a more preferable direction, into the direction of unification and out of the direction of separation. However, at this moment in time, it doesn't appear to be the case. It is what is needed to infuse that which you would prefer as an individual and to bring that forth into your direct communities and then to bring that forth into the world in whatever form you choose. In other words, rather than sitting back and being idle, this is an opportunity for each and every one of you to begin to reflect upon your own life and how what you are seeing and experiencing that you don't like may be something that you are, to a lesser degree perhaps, experiencing in your own life. And what changes can you make in your own life that are more representative of something different and better and more cohesive? Does this make sense?
That makes absolute sense.
Related to that, it seems that there are two coexisting realities here in the United States. Many people think our new president is quite insane, and others believe that the world is insane and the new president will straighten things out, and they're in opposition. And when you meet people, you have to be kind of wary. New people, you have to be kind of wary, trying to figure out where they're coming from, whether they're in your reality or this other reality. I wonder if you could talk about that.
Well, let's just clarify the idea of realities. All of you are experiencing bits and pieces of separate realities that are, in essence, all one. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
So when you are experiencing somebody else's quote-unquote reality, you are literally experiencing a part of your own reality as well. There is no separating of realities per se to the degree that you are expressing here.
Mm-hmm.
What you are experiencing in the world, what you're experiencing in your own country from a political standpoint, is very much representative of the shift in energetic vibration, in the elevating of a more compassionate planet, and along with that, you will feel the resistance from those who are not quite there yet. Does this make sense?
Yeah.
So the good news is that with this kind of duality at such a peak point right now in your history is a sign, an indication for you that you are on the tip of the iceberg. Now, which direction would you prefer to go? Would you prefer to continue to look at the negative aspects, or would you prefer to look at those seemingly negative aspects as an indication of how you can make changes in your own personal life, with the understanding that those individual choices stretch far beyond the scope of your own individual bodies? Is this making sense?
Yeah. Okay. That's interesting. All right, I have a question. Thousands of people believe they've been abducted by aliens. Is it true, and what does it mean?
The word abducted holds with it a connotation that does not necessarily represent the idea of what is actually transpiring. There is, behind the idea of an abduction is the idea that one or a multitude of individuals are not in agreeance with what is happening. Yes? More
in what sense?
With an abduction, there is the idea that someone is being forced to go somewhere with someone else. Yes?
Against
their will. When we're talking about the extraterrestrial beings that are coming onto your planet and continue to come onto your planet, that are a part of your planet in many ways, there is an agreement in place already between the human being and between the extraterrestrial being, although it may not seem like it from the human mind, from a higher level of understanding, that agreement is in place and intact.
Is that agreement something that's made before the individual is born?
Yes. Yes. It's part of the overall template, let's say, but that is not to say that with some awareness, you do not have the ability to change your course of action, but it takes a level of awareness to do that.
Right. Okay.
In other words, if someone is experiencing something that seems uncomfortable and has an understanding that this is something that I could have and probably have agreed to prior to coming here, with that awareness, that individual can then change their course and express to the universe around them that this is not something that I'd prefer to partake in any longer.
So what are these alien encounters that many people are having? What is this all leading to for us?
There are many reasons for that. Specifically in terms of the planet Earth, it is for the idea of bringing into your planet, bringing into your experience of being a human being, the idea that you are not alone, that there are other ways of doing things that are perhaps more conducive to the growth of the human family, the planet, the species that inhabit the planet with you. There are different ways of looking at things. There are different ways of treating things. There are different ways of communicating with one another that will lead to a higher vibration as a whole on the planet. There are no, although many of you may disagree with this, there are no beings coming into your planet that are out to get you, let's say. This is a mutual collaboration. It is the perception of the exchanges that creates a fear-based reality that could very well turn into something fearful, something seemingly negative, but that is from the construct of the human mind, not from the exchange itself.
Okay, that's fascinating.
I've noticed that some channelers began their work with Ouija boards, but many people are afraid of them and think they're evil. So what do you say to that?
Many people are afraid of channelers and think they are evil. It is all in perception. It is all in perception. Many people are afraid of tea leaves. Many people are afraid of tarot cards. Many people are afraid of open spaces. Many people are afraid of being on a tall building. These are all fear-based beliefs that are specific to certain individuals. Sometimes they're, oftentimes they're belief systems that have been imposed by other people throughout their life.
Mm-hmm. Well, how do you, okay, take the fear around money, for instance, on having prosperity. What is that based on? Is that based on attitude handed down from families, generations, or what?
It is not so much the fear of having money, it's the fear of not having money that creates the problem.
Right.
And that fear, again, can be derived from a multitude of different places throughout one's life. Perhaps growing up without the idea of having an abundance of food in the fridge, without the abundance of having warm clothes and new sneakers and trips with the family to the warm places in the world. Without having that,
right,
there's this feeling of loss, this feeling of incompleteness, because everybody else around them, or at least many of them, have these things. So there's the idea of luxuries that one would like to have. But then there is a stronger fear forming belief, which is the idea of the necessities not being met. The idea of having a hungry body, the idea of being cold, the idea of being alone. And this is where the planet is shifting and turning now, although again, it may not seem like it on many different places around the planet, but the elevation in the resonance of the planet is coming about through the idea of compassion for one another, wanting everyone to be fed, wanting everyone to have enough money, which really, in the end, money is not required for the betterment of the planet. It is one of the things that has created, we apologize, it is one of the things that has created the biggest problems on the planet.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah. What are your recommendations for manifesting whatever it is that you want?
To stop focusing on what you don't have. This is the thing that trips most people up most of the time. By wishing and praying and hoping for something to come into fruition, into one's life, is more or less reinforcing the idea that it is absent. So changing the way you are personally putting it out there to that invisible world when one sits down to pray, changing the way you pray, changing the way you are communicating with yourself and with others, changing the way you're communicating, if you're communicating at all, with those in, let's say, the non-physical realm. Taking away from the idea of, I'm praying desperately for this because I don't have it. Rather, we like to encourage you to place yourself exactly in that feeling state of being in abundance of whatever it is that you're looking for. This means, for the most part, doing it in the mind's eye, developing a portion of your day that is set aside for meditating, for sitting in peace, for finding tranquility and being able to find this place and to feel it, not to think it, but to feel it.
So to be more like a dog, really. I mean, if you look at dogs, everything is now. It's immediate. It's usually joyful.
Yes, because they're living more from a conscious state. As a human being, the majority of your life is being enacted from a subconscious level where you are coming from habitual patterns.
Mm-hmm.
So as habitual creatures, a human being is a habitual creature, it is about releasing yourself from habits that aren't necessarily serving your highest good anymore and creating new ones that are. So looking at the animal kingdom, the nature around you is an extremely effective way of tapping into your own consciousness.
Okay.
Solomon, what environment do you exist in?
Define environment.
Surroundings. Whatever.
Is everything just consciousness for you?
we experience physicality. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
We are experiencing we are experiencing physicality with you right now. We are experiencing the feeling of the airwaves. We are experiencing the views of a multitude of surroundings. The difference is that there is no definition between space. In other words, it is all open and expanded, yet we can narrow in and see specific viewpoints. Does this make sense?
Yeah, it does. But I've always wondered if in the afterlife, if it's possible to create, for instance, structures, if it's possible to create, with energy, to create books, for instance.
Yes, of course.
Library.
Yes. Anything is possible. Okay. And everything is created. There is from the idea of the non-physical, there is no limiting beliefs that confine you to anything in particular. In other words, when you imagine how many beings are living on the non-physical plane, there is an abundance, an endless array of structures, of, let's say, organization, where things have been placed and put together for specific reasons. But there is also a lack of that at the same time. That feeling of weightlessness, that feeling of movement, that feeling of continual momentum. But there are more choices from the non-physical realm.
That makes sense.
So what is the nature of time and space in the non-physical world environment?
It is defined by the being. So let's talk your language. It is defined by what the being is choosing to experience in that moment. So we are with you now here in this time, in your space, in your reality, as we state at the beginning of these conversations. So we are, in essence, part of that time-space reality while we are communicating. Yes?
Okay.
But we have the ability, and so do you, to extend far beyond that at the same time. There will come a time in the evolution of being a human being, as the energy is portraying itself now, that you will all be able to do this. And many of you do be able to do this on a more regular and continual basis. Many of you have felt this through your experiences with meditation, through out-of-body experiences, through the dreamlike state, where you feel what we are talking about, that idea that you can be on the other side of the planet in a second, in a split second, yes?
Right, yes.
So for us to give you an analogy, this would be the best, this would be the best way to explain to you what it is like to be on the non-physical. We can literally beam ourselves, for lack of a better word. We don't really like that word, but it seems to be the word that describes what we were trying to say, anywhere at any time. So we can experience other planets. We can experience other realities much easier than from the confines of being a human being.
Can you be in more than one place at the same time?
Yes. Again, there are no limits. That's a tough
so
one, yes.
What do you do? What do you do in your off time?
There are people. We don't need off time because we are not exhausted. Let's go back just briefly to the idea of being in more than one place at a time. You all do this through your dreams.
Right.
So it is not that far-fetched, really. It just seems, because you're asking this question from an awake state, it seems difficult to comprehend. Yet when you're sleeping, you are all doing this. Not all the time, but there are definitely incidences and times where this is happening to many of you, if not all of you, throughout your lives. Many of you travel to different parts of the world throughout the night and have no idea what you're doing, but you are doing work on different areas of your planet.
So I understand that Solomon is a collection of entities. Have these entities had human existence previously?
Yes, many. Not all, but most. Yes. And specifically okay. speaking about the idea that the two of you are most engaged with in terms of synchronicities, we would just like to share something briefly, if we may. There are those that specifically have chosen, we'll use the word job again, it's not the best word, but they have chosen to take on the role of a synchronistic organizer, let's say. So they spend a lot of their time organizing and creating and setting up these synchronistic events that you find so intriguing.
Oh, that's fascinating. Makes perfect sense. It's like that underlying, it's, in quantum physics, it's the underlying reality that connects everything.
Yes.
And that synchronicity is a connecting point between the everyday world and that deeper world, deeper
yes.
consciousness.
Exactly. We would like to make one clarification just to make sure that there's no misunderstanding. Although there are those that create these synchronicities, it is not that specific being that is actually creating the synchronistic event in and of itself. They are merely putting the pieces together. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh. Yeah,
great.
It's like Indra's net in Hindu belief that everything is connected. It's the web.
Yes, there is no disconnection. You cannot possibly be disconnected. Mm-hmm. It is impossible. Whoever said that nothing is impossible was wrong.
Yes. Okay. That's very cool.
We would like to thank you for taking this time to join us, to share with us, to laugh with us. We enjoy when these conversations are lighthearted. We enjoy the work that you do. We enjoy the fact that you are keeping more synchronistic organizers at work. We look forward to our next exchange.
Thank you, Solomon.
We do too.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is great.
Well, that was very interesting.
That was fascinating.
Yeah, as always.
I have a really cool now I can't talk. This is very synchronistic. I'm here.
That was your synchronicity?
Yeah. Okay, I should take a few minutes to talk before I come out of that.
Are you aware of all the things that you're saying as they're said? So.
Mm-hmm. The way I like to describe it to people is if I was sitting in a room listening to the conversation, it's like I'm sitting in a chair partaking in the conversation by way of listening. And so, you know, sometimes you're listening to, let's say, a radio show and your mind starts to wander. Not that that would ever happen on our show.
No tangents here.
But let's say your mind starts to wander, or you start thinking about the thing that was just said, and then you realize, oh, I need to come back. I might miss something. That's how it is for me. And then I realize, oh, I'm still talking.
Well, do you translate what you get? Is it like blocks of information?
No, I just literally open my mouth and start talking.
Oh, okay. Wow. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So it's like automatic writing, except it's automatic talking.
Yeah.
My mother used to tell me that I was definitely an automatic talker. Only
some things never change.
We used to have silent contests in the car when we were driving places. So now I found a way to just talk all the time.
So this all came about after your near-death experience for you.
Yeah. Exactly. But I think, you know, you touched on something earlier and it was very brief, but when we talked about the idea that, you know, we we all have these abilities. We just need to foster, we need to foster them. We need to, well, we don't need to do anything. Solomon would never, ever say we need to do anything, but they would highly suggest that we find a way to find time in our busy, hectic lives where we can sit and be with ourselves and we can hear our intuition and we can align with those synchronicities that are all around us, but half the time we're just too busy to even notice them. So sometimes if we're not taking the steps in that direction more consciously from, well, I guess it still is from a conscious level, sort of like the higher consciousness of it all will step in. And I think that's what happened with me, that I just wasn't reading all the signs and that it took literally face planting into a rock wall to knock things into place and to get things going. And I don't think we need to do that. I think we just need to take the time and the energy and to have the trust and faith in ourselves that there is something bigger and grander that we are connected to.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, if I send you some questions, I'd love to do a blog post on you guys. And if I send you some questions, could you, you know, no hurry, just whenever you have the time.
For sure.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That sounds like a great opportunity. Thanks, Trish.
Okay.
Yeah.
That'd be great. Cause we're always looking for stories. And you two, you have a unique we've done a lot of these radio shows. Yours is unique.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Fascinating.
Glad to hear it. Yeah, it's always very interesting when you get the opportunity to talk to Solomon. I know you guys can't see, but they were really enjoying speaking with you guys. And I could tell because, Stephanie sits forward, like Stephanie's body will sit forward and they use their hands a lot and like they're smiling.
Those are my hands.
It's very expressive. But I could tell today anyways, they were having a lot of fun.
Oh, well, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, good. We'll ask some fun questions.
We always like to talk about aliens and UFOs when we can, because with people or entities who are open to it, because a lot of people are very close to this subject. We have a book called Aliens in the Backyard that we've written, and there's a lot of fear-based stuff in that book from people's experiences, but there's some lighter material too, but...
So it's fascinating to talk to somebody like Solomon about UFOs and aliens.
And the perspective on abduction is very interesting, too.
That is.
Yeah, Solomon's really forthcoming with the information regarding extraterrestrials, and we've done a couple of shows. We did a show not too long ago with Wilbur Allen, and he's a UFO researcher, and that was a really interesting program.
That was fascinating. I think you guys would really enjoy that.
That's in your archive?
Yeah, it's in the archives, and we've also had a friend of ours who happened to witness a UFO, and we got together for a personal session, and it's just always fascinating the information that comes through regarding the extraterrestrials that are actually participating with us and in the ways that we've agreed to prior, just like they mentioned to you.
And then there was a lady too who came to one of our speaking events, and then she came to a Solomon group event, and her questions were around her connection with extraterrestrial beings. And Solomon's not always quite so specific, but he was with her and said that she, you know, she was connected quite strongly to the Palladian race. And then just as it was sort of, you know, that went on for a bit. And then when it seemed like they were done talking about it out of the blue, they said, would you like to know your Palladian name? And she said, I would love to. And so they gave it to her. And synchronistically, it was a name that she'd already been given through a meditation.
Wow. That's incredible.
Fascinating.
Well, there's just such an, I think, you know, one of the things that I'm finding is that there seems to be such an abundance of people that are coming forth and have been coming forth for years, and more people are becoming open to the idea of channeling and the idea of synchronicities and the idea of precognition. And I think when you ask that question about what's going on with our political system and how is that representative of what's happening, I think their perspective on it is such a healthy one to take, that we need this to amplify in us what we really want and what we're going to strive towards.
It's a contrast.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. it shows us the direction that we need to take in order to see the world we want to be.
Right.
But we're out of time
for... That makes sense.
Yeah, we're out of time for today, guys.
We're going to have you guys back.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, guys. You guys are fascinating. I'll send you some questions the next week or so.
Awesome. We have more books coming out, too, in the next year.
I bet you do.
Yeah, you have to.
Another 30 this year?
Yeah, a couple more.
Yeah, you guys are great. I love your show. It's just wonderful.
Oh, thanks, Trish. Know. Yeah, thanks, Rob. It's been fantastic having you here. And yeah, absolutely. Let's definitely get together again and continue the conversation.
Sounds good to me. Very good. Thanks, Solomon, please.
You're very welcome.
I don't think that's how he talks.
Okay, we'll take it.
We'll take what we can get. Beggars can't be choosers.
Well, that was a fun interview. And to all our listeners out there, thank you for tuning in, and we look forward to seeing you back in 2 weeks as we'll have with us another amazing guest named Tom Palladino, who is bringing health to the planet in a whole new way using scalar energy. For those of you who would like to learn more about Stephanie and Solomon or to book your own private or group Solomon session, go to our website at stephanie-banks.com. And don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel at solomonlive.com. Thanks again, everyone, and have an amazing week.